Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 271. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going on. Getting over the flu in our house, and I don't know. I've got a little junk, and don't think I had the flu, but I've got a little something, and I'm pretty tired, exhausted, but we're here. We're going to get through it. We're going to grind it out, and it's going to be a good episode I'm looking forward to, and man, we just had a huge trade, which is pretty exciting, so I'm looking forward to talking about that as well.
Yeah, literally just about getting ready to hit record, and then Chris was like, oh, Jeff Passan just tweeted, what's going on? And then it's like, whoa, it's more than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah,
so Corbin Burns going to the Baltimore Orioles to form a nasty 1-2-3 along with Kyle Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez. You got infielder Joey Ortiz, lefty DL Hall in the 34th overall pick in the 2024 draft going back. You know, maybe on the surface that feels a bit light, but this is definitely a fun trade. I just tweeted out, I think Burns is in for a huge year now. You could tell that there was some bad blood there between him and Milwaukee over the arbitration thing last offseason. And this is a contract year for him, new team. I got a feeling you're going to see a big bounce, but not that he was bad last year, obviously. But I think you're going to see Burns closer to 2021, 2022 Burns than 2023. And DL Hall, let's keep it just on the pitching here. DL Hall wasn't going to be on the show sheet tonight, but we figured we'd start out the show with DL Hall now. Man, do you still have any faith that he's a starter, though, Chris? Obviously, the stuff is nasty with DL Hall. That's never been a question whatsoever. But the command and control has always been a question mark. But the back end of that rotation in Milwaukee, especially now, even before this trade, the back two was a Colin Ray and Joe Ross, according to the roster resource. Now it's Freddie Peralta and then Wade Miley and then a bunch of question marks. Mm-hmm. Maybe you see a little Robert Gasser earlier than anticipated. And then maybe, I don't know. Do you think DL Hall still has a chance of the starter? I'm still saying no, but hey, maybe Milwaukee sees something on him. So who knows?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. As you mentioned, it was already kind of question marks at the back of that rotation anyway. Now, even more question marks. I think Gasser's the easy one. He threw 135 AAA innings last year. Really solid arm. I have no clue what they do with DL Hall. Maybe they see him as a starter. Maybe they saw something to bring him in. And they're like, okay, we can do something with this. And I don't know. It's really interesting to look and say, okay, how does this all sort out? There's a lot of questions of how the Brewers ultimately work out now. I mean, they were set to line up Andrew Monasterio at third base. Even if Willy Adames is not traded, I think Joey Ortiz is going to play. He's more than ready. I think we've seen that. He's proved that he's a great glove in the field. He's got a really good bat as well. So I've been a Joey Ortiz fan for a long time. I'm really liking this move for him. Man, Hall is, I don't know. Like, I do think that Hall is a reliever. I've said on that long term, I think Hall's a reliever. But the Brewers have done some good things with arms. So it wouldn't be shocked to see him get in the rotation. So we shall see. But I don't know. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, because currently after Peralta and Miley, you got Colin Ray, Joe Ross, and then whoever else you decide to throw in that rotation right now. Yeah, I think Gasser's like a lock for 20-plus starts right now. And yeah, the upside isn't crazy high, but could be a solid number three type guy in the major leagues. Especially if you're out there playing those best balls, those DCs, 50-round draft and hold leagues, great target. I was right targeting him anyway. I thought he'd still get like 15 to 20 starts this year, maybe even more. Now I think that's only going to go up. I think it's 20-plus easily. Maybe you even see him get 125-plus innings at the major league level this year. So it definitely opens up an easier path for Robert Gasser. And yeah, I still don't think Hall. I think Hall could just be a nasty reliever out of the pen. It was already a pretty good pen. They already had the one lefty with Hobie Milner. So Hall is a nice addition there. Makes a good pen even better. But yeah, very, very fun trade to kick off the show. And if we hit record like 10 minutes before we did, we would have completely missed it. We probably would have been looking at Twitter and then saw it after the podcast or something like that. But real quick, though, before we get into the rest of our outline for tonight. First off, this is the part two of our Dynasty starting pitcher rankings. Did part one in episode 270 with Mr. Nick Pollock of Pitcher List, obviously. A lot of great conversation there. Player breakdown, strategy, what we look for in pitchers. A lot of great stuff. So go back and check that one out if you missed it. And I just want to give a shout out to, first off, we are a finalist for the Best Baseball Podcast by FSWA. Thank you to them for making us a finalist. And so I want to give a shout out to the other finalists. It's an absolutely loaded set of seven here. So outside of us, you got the Sleeper and the Bust, obviously the staple in this industry. Pitcher List, Nick Pollock. Shout out to Nick again. The RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, our buddy James Anderson, obviously. And then you got Bubba and the Bloom, two good friends of ours there. Rates and Barrels, another staple of this industry, and RotoWorld. So it's absolutely loaded set of finalists there. Just an honor to be included in this. And you know, shout out to all the other finalists to all the baseball categories. It's great to see a lot of our industry friends and even some new names get some love and some recognition for their hard work. Congrats to all the finalists for this year's FSWA Awards. And yeah, let's get right into it now, Chris. Just wanted to get that out of the way here and show some love to our buddies across the industry. And we're going 26 through 50 here. We're just going to get our entire ranks out of the way here. We'll say them again later in the show just to get them out there again. But Chris, who you got 26 through 50?
All right. So 26 starts with Kyle Bradish for me. Then it's Cole Reagans, Tanner Bibee, Justin Steele, and Joe Musgrove through 30. And then 31 through 35 is Shane Boz, Walker Buehler, Hunter Green, Joe Ryan, and Zach Eflin. Next five, 36 through 40, would be Christian Javier, Jordan Montgomery, Dylan Cease, Nick Lodolo, Sandy Alcantara. 41 through 45 being Shane McClanahan, Bryce Miller, Brian Wu, Bram Bayo, Hunter Brown. And then the final five would be Taj Bradley, Emmett Sheehan, Andrew Painter, Cade Horton, and Jackson Jobe.
All right. For me, I have Jesus Luzardo, Kyle Bradish, Cole Reagans, Justin Steele, and Shane Boz, 26 to 30. 31 through 35, Joe Musgrove, Tanner Bibee, Jackson Jobe, Sandy Alcantara, Hunter Brown. 36 through 40, Nick Lodolo, Michael King, Hunter Green, Zach Eflin, Cade Horton. 41 through 45, Walker Buehler, Dylan Cease, Paul Skeens, Christian Javier, Joe Ryan. And 46 through 50, Ricky Tiedemann, Breon Bayo, Mitch Keller, Sonny Gray, and Jacob DeGrom, who I just have no freaking idea where to rank him. Did you have DeGrom on yours? I don't recall you.
Nope, I don't.
As a curiosity, where is he? You don't have to look it up. It's like roughly, do you think it was like set 70, 80, where in your pitcher rankings?
I'm going to look because I have no clue, but he's pretty low, I think. I'm pretty...
He's so hard to rank. And we're going to talk about... That's another name we can add in this little injured pitchers discussion here. Because there's a lot of big-name pitchers that are going to miss either the entire 2024 season or a good chunk of it. Obviously, we have Jacob DeGrom. Brandon Woodruff is out for the entire year. Shane McClanahan's the entire year. Sandy Alcantara's the entire year. It's rough here. And obviously, Jacob DeGrom in there as well. But he's probably back, I don't know, July, August, last I think I heard. So maybe you get, I don't know what, 40 innings out of him this year. It's hard to say. And he's 30. How old is he now? 34, 35?
Yeah, he may be 35 now.
Yeah, so he's not 29 anymore. I don't know. Out of all these guys, first off, how... When a big name arm like this gets injured, Chris, a serious injury where they're going to miss at least half a season, full season, whatever. Like, what is your thought process behind like adjusting your rankings accordingly? Because obviously you got to bump them down. What factors go into you when deciding, you know, how to value a guy like a McClanahan or a Jacob DeGrom?
Yeah, those are really tough. The TJ guys, they can be valued all over the place. And so it's really hard, but as they get closer to returning, they become more valuable. So it's one of those things, it's like the out of sight, out of mind, where you see, like, when they first get injured, you know, it's okay, whatever. But then, you know, they're halfway through the rehab, you haven't heard anything about them in 6 months. And then I think that's really the time to buy, because the out of sight, out of mind rule, where no one talks about them, they, you know, obviously you're working back from an injury, but that's the point, because then you start hearing, okay, they're throwing again. They're ramping up this, that. You see some video, and then people see in their mind, they're like, okay, like I'm back in a little bit more. But so I think with the guys like McClanahan and Alcantara, who we know are going to miss the whole season or most of the whole, at least I think we think crazy things happen, but those guys are becoming more valuable as the season moves on. Brandon Woodruff, I just completely out on him, because that kind of shoulder injury is very serious. It derails careers, and I'm just not sure that Woodruff is ever the same pitcher again, sadly. So I'm very out on Brandon Woodruff. And DeGrom, he just can't stay healthy at all. Like, I looked in my dynasty rankings where I have him, I've got him 270. It's right around the same spot as guys like Luis Severino, and he's right beside Brandon Woodruff, actually, and Clayton Kershaw. Just how trustworthy can those guys be?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tough to say. DeGrom has not been a model of health at all. When he's on the mound, he's elite, but at what point is it just like completely fall off? I don't know. So those guys are very tough to value.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I've seen variations of the same question on Twitter over the years. If you can give perfect health to any one player, who would it be? And I think my answer easily, for at least for current players, all the time you can go Griffey or something like that. But current players, I think for me, it's Jacob DeGrom. Because a healthy DeGrom for his entire career could be a guy we're talking about in the same light that we talk about, like Pedro, Randy Johnson, the all-time greats. Because he has shown that when he's on, like, he's had some of the best years we've ever seen out of a starting pitcher. And obviously, it's been very limited. And Only a couple quote unquote healthy seasons out of him in his career. But man, when he's on, he is one of probably the most enjoyable pitcher to watch. And that's saying something. There's a lot of enjoyable pitchers right now. But yeah, he's still 50 for me. It's hard, but he was easily like one of the toughest five guys to rank in terms of for pitchers, at least in this update of my dynasty rankings, which I just put out. We both have recent dynasty rankings updates on both of our personal platforms, toolshedfantasy.com, thedynastydugout.com. So go check those out. Let's keep it going here. Actually, let me give my input here on this before we move on. Yeah, so for me, obviously what the injury is plays a big factor, and obviously we're not doctors, but I think at this point we've all been doing this long enough where we know what to expect from Tommy John for the most part. It's these aberrant injuries. Yeah, we've seen shoulder issues really hinder a pitcher more so than elbows. And given Woodruff is having this major shoulder issue with the surgery to correct it, and he's also, what is he, 33? 32? 33, yeah. So I'm worried because when do we see him? When he's 34, 35? And then at that point, what is Brendan Woodruff? So I'm there with you. Oh, no, he's only 31. What am I looking at? 31, but still, he gets back, he's 33. I don't know what we get from him. So, yeah, I've always been a huge Woody guy. I think I had him as high as like my SP3 or 4 at one point in Dynasty ranks about probably two-ish years ago, which I think was valid. It just sucks to see him fall so far. And like now he's outside my top 250 now. It's really rough because he was like top 50 overall for me like mid-season. So that's tough because I've had a lot of Woody shares, and now I still have a few, which obviously I can't really do anything with. But with a guy like McClanahan, now he's still younger than most of these other names we're talking about here. Now he's 26, so when he gets back, we're looking at 28-year-old, still prime of his career. But so that's why I still have him top 100 overall. I think he's like my SP, was that 17, 18 or so, in the same range as like Blake Snell, Aaron Nola, Kodai Senga, because this was a guy in at one point that I think actually did have him as my SP1 at some point. So I think he's a great buy. If you're a team that you don't think you're potentially win those this year, but maybe you're close, maybe you think you could contend in 2025, 2026, especially if he's Clanahan's Hanukkah, you know, quote unquote, contending team in your league, I try to go out and snatch him right now, get him at a solid value, and then have a potential ace back in your rotation for the following year. But yeah, it's always tough to value these guys for sure. Speaking of, let's keep the injury train rolling here. A couple guys coming back from injury. We got Walker Buehler with the Dodgers and Shane Boz with the Tampa Bay Rays. Obviously, this is a dynasty podcast, but Buehler's ADP, like, Chris, absolutely insane this year. I was shocked when it settled into the 110 to 120 range. I thought it would be 170 to 180. Not only is he coming off the second major surgery, but he was showing diminished skills before that. And yeah, maybe some was tied in. Maybe he wasn't fully healthy and it played into it, but it wasn't like he was at the top of his game and then got hurt randomly. He was struggling a bit before he got hurt last year. What are you expecting from Buehler? Do you think he's a bounce back and be a top 25 arm again? I don't think that. Yeah, I think he's took some solid value. He's still talented, but I just think people think that he's going to bounce back to being that top 25 guy, and I just don't think that's the case.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, he's such a major question mark where it's like, okay, what is he going to be? He was already like seemingly declining before this second TJ. And now, what does he look like coming back? Fastball has always been the biggest question mark. He's got hit around a good bit. I don't know. I just can't fully buy back in to Buehler. I think he's going to be interesting to see what he looks like when he does return. We saw a little glimpse of him last year in AAA, I think, to end the year. And so, I don't know. I'm just not invested. It's more of a wait and see approach, which probably means that I'm going to miss out on him, which is fine. I'd rather miss out than take this risk. This feels way too risky for me. Because when we look at it, yeah, Buehler had his stints where he was really awesome, you know, from 2019 and even really 2018 up through 2021. And it dropped off a bit in 2022 in those 65 innings before the injury. Yeah, I don't know. He's a really big question mark. I look back, yeah, he threw two perfect innings in his outing when he came back in AAA last year to close out the year. Fastball is like between 93 and 96. Through the cutter, like 87, 89. Slider, or the sinker, excuse me, was 92, 94. The slider was low 80s. I don't know. He looked different, like something looked different in the profile. So I don't know. I'm not like way in on him. I think I'm just sitting back and waiting.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I'd much rather invest in a Shane Boz who's younger. And yeah, he's had a lot of injury issues himself. So I'm not saying he's safer or anything like that, but yeah, the four-seamers got hit around a ton back in 2022. EV was near 92 miles an hour. Batting average against was over 300. It was like one of the worst four-seamers that season. I'm trying to find it here where it ranked in terms of, you know, batting average against. So it was 365 batting average against. See, minimum, let's go 86 plate appearances here. So let's go with a minimum of 50 and see where that puts us for the worst four seamers that year. It's got to be near the top of the list. Okay, it was the 13th worst. Bruce Zimmerman's was the worst at a 435 batting average against. Not a lot of good names on this list, though. It's Bruce Zimmerman. It's Antonio Zenzatella. It's Chris Stratton. Cole Reagans is on that list, though, but obviously he's proved a ton since then. Yeah, I'd rather go after Shane Boz, like I said. What we saw from him, you know, I think there's still ace upside there. If he can get the innings, there's definitely ace upside. We saw him improve his command and control exponentially back in, I don't even remember what year it was this one, I think 2021. And stuff has always been elite with him. Big fastball, the two distinct breaking balls that he can miss bats with, good, you know, solid changeup as well. Obviously, value has gone down a good amount. So right now I've been trying to get Boz everywhere I can. I think he could get back up or get up to being like a top. I won't be surprised me if he's inside top 20 rankings for dynasty pitchers at this time next year. Like, the upside is there. He just needs to stay healthy. So I'd rather hitch my wagon to a guy like Shane Boz. A couple of names here that were right in the beginning of our rankings here, 26 through 50, Kyle Bradish and Justin Steele. I was very much a Steele skeptic, Chris, in 2022, like his first kind of big year, he had a 3.18 ERA and 24 starts, but being a two-pitch guy, higher whip, 1.35 whip that year, I was like, all right, he was one of my bigger fades, and I was completely wrong about Justin Steele. Is he got even better? 3.06 ERA and 30 starts, dropped the whip down to a much more respectable 1.17. And he's still a two-pitch guy. And yeah, I don't think the four-seamer is elite or anything like that. Velocity is below average, 91.8. But hey, he makes it work. Like, 275 batting average against, but only a 393 slug. Does not give up a lot of hard contact at all. Slider is a very good slider. Not elite, but like, it's working. I still don't know completely how it's working. He's just hitting his spots well, gets ground balls. Like, he's pitching very well. Dropped the walk rate from 9.8% to 5% this past year. So I think he's locked into the solid SP, your high-end SP3, back in SP2 if you're in a deeper format, like a top 30-ish pitcher. I don't think there's more upside, but I'm done questioning Steele, I guess is what I'm saying here.
Yeah, I do fear that there's some regression coming with Justin Steele, but to what extent, it's hard to say. He's been steady the last 2 years. He just doesn't allow a lot of hard contact. Obviously, the strikeout rate's not as high as you would like, but it's okay when you're posting, you know, high-end ratios. The fastball does worry me a bit. The location is on it, and he continues to throw it more. And sitting 90 below 92, like, he's in a little bit of a worrisome range. But that fastball, very few starters can excel below 91. If you just want to look at that list of on Savant leaderboard, fastballs less than 91, it's all just basically aging starters or like aging vets and nobodies. Like, you can't excel with that. So yeah, I think it's fine. I think that he does enough with the slider. The slider's a really good pitch, and he's effectively just a two pitch guy, being the heavy four seam and the slider. And so he's going to rely heavily on that weak contact. He has to induce weak contact, which makes it a little bit more of a volatile profile. Just if he does allow more hard contact, then things could go south pretty quickly. The good news is that he walked way less batters last year, cut the walk rate from 9.8% to 5%. So that's obviously encouraging. Yeah, I don't know. I like Steele. I've got him ranked pretty highly, but yeah, I do think there's some potential downside if things did go south, just because he doesn't miss a ton of bats.
So you're more in the sell high than buy camp right now with Justin Steele.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends on what you can get. I'm not sure you can sell like overly high, but like looking at my rankings, I've still 29. So like we both have him 29. Would I sell him for Shane Boz? Maybe.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was literally going to ask if you could get Shane Boz in like a minor second piece, like a draft pick or a prospect or something thrown in, would you do that?
Yeah, probably. I think I would. Just because the upside, especially if you have a pretty solid rotation, you can afford to shoot for upside, then yeah, 100% would.
Yeah, I think I would as well. Yeah, I don't think he's going to jump up rankings. Like I said, I don't think he's going to be a top 20 guy, but I think he can settle into this range, but it is he has to continue like doing exactly what he's done. Like, he can't, that fastball falls off at all. Location changes a little bit. You know, it could go south and hurt it, like you mentioned. So there's an element of risk here for sure, but I've stopped always doubting him to the point where I was 12 months ago. But yeah, Kyle Bradish, though, the other one in this range, you know, I like Bradish a good amount. And he was a guy that was never really ranked super high as a prospect coming up through, but he's made some pretty solid changes throughout the season last year, because he's another one where the four seamer was not good at all. You look at last year, 366 batting average against and a 602 slug, but he started going less four seamers, more sinkers. So this is the four seam usage month by month, it's April through September, 38%, 29.3%, 20%, 22%, 16.1%, and 16.5%. Sinker went from 12.9 in April, 16, 20.4, 19.2, 25.1, 26.1. That was very encouraging. The sinker was a much better offering for him. A couple breaking balls, both of the whiff rate in that 35-36% range. Is he going to jump up again and be a top 15 guy? No, but I do like him a bit more than I do Steele right now. More diverse arsenal, more bat missing ability by a little bit. Yeah, I'm digging Bradish here as well, Chris.
Yeah, he's certainly somebody that is a good investment, and it goes way back to the second half of 2022, which is what really turned me on to him. He was so good that second half, and I want to pull up the numbers just to show you. Let's see, 2022. Yeah, he was 7.38 in the first half of 2022, and then post All-Star break, he was a 3.28 across 71 innings. And struck out 65, and he had tinkered with the pitch mix, and those results just carried right over into 2023. And yeah, ultimately, I think that his biggest benefit is he leads with the slider. Like, he doesn't need to lead with the four. And the four seems a good pitch. There's no denying that. But he completely changed the usage up from the beginning of 2022 to now. And ultimately, like, that paid dividends. Fastball is a solid pitch. Yeah, it did get hit around. Had a 366 batting average against, but he made it work because the slider had a 168 batting average against. A ton of whiffs. The curveball is a solid pitch as well, and he also throws a sinker when he wants to pitch to contacts. Yeah, for me, like Kyle Bradish is a really solid arm. Just 27 years old, he's still a really good investment in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so too. And now he doesn't have to be the ace. He's either the two or the three, depending, you know, how you view him versus Christian Rodriguez. But I think getting Burns is just going to benefit him. Doesn't have to go up against the other team's ace. Obviously, it gets jumbled throughout the season, so it doesn't really matter too much. But yeah, I'm definitely a fan of Bradish now. I think he's a very good arm and still pretty underrated for sure. Let's go over to the other. We had the big trade earlier with Corbin Burns. The other name that might get traded, who knows, but there's been a lot of discussion about him, is Dylan Cease. And I think the industry for the most part is still very much divided on Dylan Cease, and it's easy to see why, because he's been a very inconsistent pitcher throughout his career. Had obviously the one really big year in 2022, so he was vaulting up to be, like, I saw him as high as top five of dynasty pitcher rankings after a 220 ERA and a 30.4% K rate. Dropped a bit last year, and obviously the ERA ballooned, over doubled. So now, Chris, we have him. Let's see here. I have him. Oh, geez, where did I have him? I have him 42, and you had him 38. So we're both right in that 40 range. Would you consider buying Dylan Cease right now? You think? Obviously, I think we can agree he's probably not 4.58 ERA bad, but I got, is he back to being like a top 25 guy this year? Like, how big do you think the bounce back is, I guess, is what I'm trying to say here.
I think he needs to be traded.
That would help.
Yeah, Chicago just isn't it. I don't think they care, to be honest. I'm surprised. Like, they're holding on to him. I'm a little bit shocked that they aren't trading him now. They're talking about holding and waiting till midseason, but maximize the value. Just trade him. The less control you have, the less you're going to get in return. Seems like a pretty typical White Sox thing to do. Sadly, I do think there's a chance at a rebound. I think that what you're getting out of him, you're getting elite strikeouts and you're getting elite volatility too. He's one of the most volatile pitchers start to start that there is. The biggest difference we saw with Cease last year, just he just got obliterated. The average exit velocity in 2022 was at 87 miles an hour. It jumped to 90 miles an hour last year, which was, that's a significant jump when you think about it. The slider is still an elite miss pitch. It had a 43.3% whiff rate. So obviously very solid there. The curveball missed less bats. The four-seam missed less bats, and the four-seam got hit hard. Those are concerns. Four-seam had a 96 mile an hour average EV on it, which surprisingly was down from 2022, but the location's just got to improve. He's all over the place. He doesn't really know where the pitches are going when he throws them, and that's to his detriment. I do think that Cease could benefit from a completely new org. The talent's there. The upside's there. Strikeouts are there, but yeah. To me, I'm not sure like what camp I'm in on Cease. Like, part of me wants to buy and hope he's traded, but how White Sox would it be to just hold on to him for the duration of his contract and let him walk? And I'm not sure I can handle two more years of that on my team. So it's a weird spot to be in, honestly.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. And can they trade Lou Bob while they're at it? Because I have so many Luis Robert shares. Can we just get him on another team? Any other team? It's not the Angels, not any other team, but get him out of here, get Cease out of there. I do think Cease would absolutely benefit because, yeah, the only team that cares less right now than my Red Sox is the White Sox, I feel. So I feel bad for, like, our good buddy Mike Carter, who I think is the only White Sox fan I know. But, yeah, that's a really bad situation right there. So can't understate that when valuing Dylan Cease. And all of his pitches just got worse this past year. Look at the slider was still good, but it was elite in 2022. Curveball went, you know, south for the winter. Almost a 300 batting average against on that. The whiff rate was not good at all on the curveball. So really, he could only miss bats with that slider. Yeah, he had a higher whiff rate on the changeup, but he only threw that 3% of the time. So mix in the poor command of his pitches. The changeup command is just terrible. Four-seamer command was too over the heart of the plate. he could take. He's still only 28, so obviously the stuff is there. But I feel like the value has dropped enough where I think it's a good buy. Yeah, is he got a rebound? Yeah, I would say that. But I think people still think he's closer to 2022 Cease than 2023 Cease. And I think that's causing the value to stay too high for my liking. But moving over to a rookie here who, you know, in the middle of all this big rookie class we had in 2023 for pitchers, this guy didn't have that great of a year in terms of the surface stats compared to other guys like Tanner Bibee and others that had pretty solid years. Yuri Perez, obviously, a lot of great rookies this past year. But Hunter Brown started off the season solidly, but really second half, that ERA just kept rising and rising, finished at 509 in 155 and two-thirds innings. Did have 178 Ks in those innings. Higher whip, though, 136. Did get hit around harder than we would have liked. 44.2% hard hit rate. Do you think now is a good time to buy Hunter Brown, Chris? Like, obviously, one of the better pitching prospects coming up through the minor leagues, and I do think he's better than this. So I'm definitely looking to buy Hunter Brown right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how much he can harness the command. I think that's the biggest question mark, is that can he harness the command in enough to be a really solid starter? And maybe, I'm not ruling that out. I'd like to see some improvement with the strike throwing, but the stuff is really good. There's no denying that his stuff is absolutely incredible. Got to locate the four-seamer a little better, but he's sitting 96, so he's got some leeway with it. But he did give up some home runs with it, some hard hits as well. Yeah, I love the curve slider. He throws a splitter in there some too, which is pretty interesting. I'd love to see him feature that a little bit more, but he's predominantly fastball, curve, sliders. The stuff's there. Just the location's got to be better, because he missed with the slider over the heart of the plate a lot. He missed with the curve over the heart of the plate, and it hurt him. But from a pure Arsenal standpoint, and I hate this, but when Savant does the similar pitchers based on velo and movement profiles, Gerrit Cole, Tyler Glasnow, Zach Gallen, Taj Bradley, Connor Phillips. So pretty interesting group there. That just shows you the kind of talent in the arm that Hunter Brown has. It's just, can he locate those pitches well enough? And I don't see why he couldn't improve. And we're talking about a 25-year-old, and it was his first stint professionally. So I think better days are certainly ahead. So yeah, I'm in on him for sure.
Yeah, I definitely am too. And yeah, this is definitely a, you know, issue with command, not so much control. The walk rate was fine. He's got a 8.5% range, but he's better than this. How much better? I mean, is he going to be a top 25 guy? I wouldn't rule that out, but I think he's more a guy that's going to be top 30 to 40 pitcher, like a SP3 for your fantasy team or something like that. But in general, I do think he's a good buy right now, because I think people are looking at the other big rookies that had better years on the pitching side than him. And this whole "what have you done for me lately" thing, people were very quick to, you know, start questioning, oh, is this guy as good as we thought he was? And I think a little bit of that has settled in for Hunter Brown right now. Yeah, I definitely would be looking to buy low right now. And another name that you just mentioned in those similar pitchers that is kind of a similar boat, Taj Bradley. He actually, under the hood, didn't have a terrible year. The surface stats obviously weren't where we hoped they were, but I believe he was second or third, is at least top five for rookie pitchers in K-minus walk rate this past year. And still, again, a lot of good stuff under the hood here. So would you be looking to invest in Taj Bradley right now, Chris?
I think so. I still like Taj as an arm. It's one of those cases, like you mentioned, where when a guy comes up and doesn't immediately perform, everybody kind of jumps ship. And he was bad. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Strikeouts were there. He did walk some guys. But the results ultimately were bad. He got hit around really hard. A lot of hard contact. But I do believe in this arsenal. I love the fastball. I love the cutter. I think the curveball can be pretty solid as well. I'd love to see him throw like a mid-80s slider. Like he sits 96 with the four-seam. He sits 89 with the cutter. Give me a slider in there as well. I'd love to see him develop that. I think it could be quite a game changer. But yeah, I'd say in a general sense, like, it's a good time to buy Taj. You know, top prospect comes up, struggles, that's when you buy. So yep, that's what I'm looking to do with Taj Bradley, is to buy.
Yeah, definitely a command issue here. Again, the walk rate was fine, similar to Brown, 8.5%, K rate 28%, but left way too many pitches over the heart of the plate, especially the four-seamer, the curveball, and changeup. More so the curveball command was kind of not as tight as you would have liked that there, but definitely has the swing and miss stuff. There's no doubt about that. And another guy that uses all four of his pitches to both righties and lefties, which is very nice to see, but just gave up too much hard contact. That's really the thing. He shows better command. Hopefully that hard contact rate comes down, and you can see a nice bounce back from Taj Bradley. Still only 22 years old and obviously in a great org. So definitely, I think the price is actually probably even better on Bradley right now than it is for Hunter Brown. But another one I wanted to ask you about here, let's go back to Houston here. Obviously, we both have Javier ranked higher than Brown. But given what you think the price point is for both of these guys, would you rather go invest in Hunter Brown right now or a guy like Christian Javier, who's another guy that's been very fluctuant with his production in his career over the last few years?
It's a good question. Probably rather have Brown, honestly. Javier's still young, still 26 years old, and he's been really good. But we did see that major regression last year, started with the fastball, in my opinion, taking a full tick back. The fastball was sitting 94, it set 92.7 in 2023. He allowed 21 home runs on that pitch. That was up from 11 in 2022, and he threw about the same amount of pitches of both. So that's a bit concerning to me. The slider whiff rate dropped from 39.5% with Javier down to 28.7. It's obviously a huge drop there. Curve whiff rate 30% to 19.5. I think there's some concerning signs with Javier. I still like him. I still like the chances of bounce back, but I do believe that ultimately we'll see Hunter Brown probably have a higher ceiling.
Yeah, I'm definitely in agreement there. Look at Javier. It's a weird profile. I was to mention the 10-11% drop in whiff rate on the two breakers as well. And he's a four-pitch guy against lefties, really only a two-pitch guy against righties. He went four-seam and slider, and basically, I'm just doing rough math in my head, 5% of the time or so against righties. So he doesn't get ground balls at all. I bet you he has one of the worst ground ball rates for starters in the major leagues. It's an under 30% in each of the last three seasons. That is really hard to do. MLB average is in that 44 or so percent range. So he's well worse than league average there. So yeah, I think you'll still see a solid K rate. I think the K rate does bounce back to some degree, maybe not back to 33% like he was in 2022, but maybe he's 26, 27% and above average K rate. But I think you're just going to see pretty fluctuant ratios. So he's just in the top 60-ish pitcher range for me moving forward. So maybe I have him ranked too high, and I'm questioning why I do have him ranked this highly, because there is still some good in the profile. There's some red flags as well. That is for sure. Let's see, who else we want to sneak into this episode here, Chris? Well, another name that we differ on quite a bit, we talked about before the show, I have him in my top 40. You don't have him in your top 50 at all, is Michael King. Obviously, former Yankee, now with the San Diego Padres, went over there in the Juan Soto deal. So what kept Michael King out of your top 50? Obviously, reliever, converted to starter, not a huge track record as a starter, but did look pretty good down the stretch. But what are you seeing from King, and how does that play into your value and ranking of him right now?
I think he's a really tough eval, in my opinion. There's just not been a consistent track record of health and innings year over year. So that's obviously concerning. He's gone in and out of the pen in the rotation. He started obviously down the stretch and was really good. But to me, I think the value jump was just a little high, like considering, it was such a small sample of starts where he was pretty good. Yeah, I'm willing to be wrong on this 100%, but I just think that he's being a bit overvalued at this point, where I do think that, he can be a solid starter, and I don't have him far outside of this at all. But I want to see him be able to consistently turn over a lineup. And yeah, I'm not sure he can do that regularly. That's my concern, is that we don't see him just be consistent throughout starts. And does he have enough in him to go like 5-6? He might. It's highly possible he did that down the stretch. We saw him go 6 and we saw him go 7 in 2 of his last 3 starts. And one of those was a big 13 strikeout game. I have to think that, obviously, as stellar as he was, like, I still just want to see a little bit more before I fully buy in. And I'm willing to miss the boat on him if that's the case. I like King, but you know, I think that he still has something to prove as a starter.
Yeah, that's definitely the concern with King, and totally fair. He's only made 9 starts last year, only 19 in his career, and I'm sure a handful of those were just as openers. But you know, I liked, in general, just looking at the pitcher, I think he has the arsenal to succeed as a starter. 4-pitch guy, uses all 4 of his pitches, both righties and lefties. You know, he has a changeup, 40.5% whiff rate, sweeper, 39.4% whiff rate. He's got the 4-seam and the sinker, both in like that 94 to 95 mile an hour range. And all pitches fared pretty well this past year. So I think if he can stay healthy, he gets ground balls as well, which is encouraging. So there's a lot of good here in the profile. Doesn't give up a lot of hard contact either. So I like King, the pitcher, but that is a fair concern. Can he do this for a full season? We saw him do it for, 5-6 weeks in August and September this past year. Can he do it from April through September? We shall see. But I am betting on the arm, and I think he's still pretty undervalued right now. So for me, he's a buy. But yeah, definitely, this would be a huge year. You could see him jump up top 30 pitcher if he does prove that, or he'll fall back down rankings if this is a guy that can't make it through a full season as using a starter's workload compared to being a reliever. But definitely one of the more kind of intriguing arms for 2024. I think that's going to wrap us up here. But before we get out of here, let's go back over our rankings here for just in case everybody forgot them, just to throw them out there one more time. Again, this was 26 through 50. 1 through 25 was last episode with Nick Pollock. Again, check that out if you missed it. My 26 through 50 was Lizardo, Bradish, Reagans, Steele, Boz at 30, Musgrove, Bibee, Job, Alcantara, Hunter Brown at 35, Lodolo, King, Green, Eflin, Horton, 40, Bueller, Cease, Skeens, Javier, Joe Ryan, 45, Ricky Tiedemann, Brayon Bello, Keller, Sonny Gray, and Jacob deGrom at 50. Chris, again, what was your 26 to 50?
All right, so 26 is Kyle Bradish, followed by Cole Reagans, Tanner Bibee, Justin Steele, and Joe Musgrove. At 31 through 35 is Shane Boz, Walker Buehler, Hunter Green, Joe Ryan, and Zach Eflin. 36 through 40, Christian Javier, Jordan Montgomery, Dylan Cease, Nick Lodolo, Sandy Alcantara. 41 through 45, Shane McClanahan, Bryce Miller, Brian Wu, Rayon Bello, Hunter Brown, and then the final 5, Tosh Bradley, Emmett Sheehan, Andrew Painter, Cade Horton, and Jackson Jobe.
All right, that does wrap up starting pitcher week here, and we got one more episode left of our Dynasty and Prospect Rankings series for 2024. On Monday, we will have the awesome Mike Carter, guy that's very well-versed with relievers, did a nice panel on relievers out in Arizona at First Pitch event there. Great guy, great mind. So we'll have him on Monday's episode. Hope everyone has a good weekend. But until we see you on Monday, everyone take care.